Hello, this is World Business Report from the BBC World Service, where we bring you the latest in money, marketing, manufacturing, and yes, much, much more. Please review us, rate us, share us wherever you can. BBC podcasts are supported by advertising.
I'm Sumi Somaskanda from the Global Story podcast, where we're looking at the problems facing Boeing after failures of its Starliner spacecraft have left two astronauts stranded in space. They were supposed to be on the International Space Station for 8 days, but will now be there for at least 8 months. This is the latest in a long line of crises facing the company. So is this one failure too far for Boeing? Find us wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to World Business Report from the BBC World Service. This is Andrew Peach. Shares in the tech giant Nvidia are down, but do the falling markets show the AI boom is over? I'll talk to one Nvidia investor. 50 African leaders are in Beijing looking for investment and tourism in exchange for access to minerals. And the German towns worrying what will happen if VW closes the car plant where everyone works.
It's a very hard discussion with the families because it's affected the complete life of the people.
If you'd like to get involved in the programme, we love hearing from you. worldbusiness@bbc.co.uk. Shares are down in Asia and the UK. There are concerns about the US economy, of course. New job figures coming out on Friday. But one particular tech giant has been hit hard.
Ready, go!
Once upon a time, it was all fun and games. NVIDIA started off by making chips for video game machines. And then one day, researchers discovered that our technology was perfect for AI.
That's NVIDIA. Their stock tumbled yesterday, wiping nearly $300 billion off the value. Let's bring in, for the latest on what's happening in New York, Russ Bold, Investment Director at AJ Bell. So this started in the US, it fell in Asia, in the UK. What's happening right now, Russ?
Hello, Andrew. It's hanging on. It's down around 1% in the early exchanges in New York right now. So that takes its total market capitalization loss over the last day and a bit to just more than $300 billion, as you say. That's the same market valuation as Coca-Cola, the world's 31st biggest company by stock market value.
Okay. Now, this is in part about NVIDIA, but actually it's a much wider thing about tech and then about US companies. Just put it into context for us, what's been going on in the last 24 hours.
I think markets are getting increasingly concerned that while the US Federal Reserve may be about to cut interest rates on the 18th of September, it's going to do so not because the war with inflation is won, but more because the US economy is slowing down and perhaps going to suffer a harder landing than everybody expected. In addition, in the background, you have, as you said, concerns over whether AI will really retard the return on investment that everybody's hoping. And ultimately, NVIDIA's share price is very, very, very high. It's still up 122% year on year, after all.
That is the thing. It's in 9 times what it was in 2022. So perhaps it's just a market correction we're seeing and no big deal. Let's bring in Michael Furtick in Paris. Michael's founded several AI companies and was one of the earliest investors in AI. Thanks for being with us on World Business Report, Michael. Let me ask you, have you been selling any of your stock in NVIDIA in the last 24 hours?
Thanks for having me. In fact, I bought more NVIDIA shares today and yesterday. By the way, that is not a stock recommendation. I'm not a stock recommender. Sure. I'm just doing it for myself and my own family. Everyone's situation is different. But I believe in the trend of AI, irrespective of the current up or down today, tomorrow, the next day, yesterday. And I believe that in my supposition, NVIDIA, which makes by far the only, by a long stretch, a country mile, the only chip that actually makes a difference in AI so far, I believe in that company. I can't speak to the stock price, but I believe in that company.
Right. I mean, you obviously believe in AI. You were very early into the AI sphere. People are talking about this being indicative that the AI bubble is bursting, which sounds a bit premature to me.
Oh, I think it's incredibly dumb as a concept, not just premature. I mean, you're British, I'm American, I can say it that way. Look, I think saying the AI is going away, or something that sounds like AI is going away, is saying like gravity is going away, or oxygen is going away, or the internet's going away. It's important to sort of level up and get to 10 or 20,000 feet and understand that this or that stock's price, this or that name's price, valuation specifically today, tomorrow, the next day, may go up or down. The tectonic shift, that the continental plate has lifted AI by, let's say, 10 kilometers. And on top of that, there's an ocean, and the ocean bobs up and down like waves. And it goes that the waves might be 10 feet, it might be 50 feet, it might be 10 feet down, 10 feet up. But the tectonic shift is so obviously in the direction of more AI at greater and greater velocity that it is clear to me that AI is going to infect and affect, for good and sometimes for ill, every aspect and facet of our lives. And therefore, AI is coming this way. The weather has turned in favor of AI. And if you're a provider of AI infrastructure, as is in the case of, for example, NVIDIA, there are others as well, then I think generally the world is coming in your direction.
Would it be fair to say not everyone is as confident as you? I mean, they might be wrong, but it would appear from what's happening on the markets that not everyone's quite as bullish about it as you are.
Well, I don't know if they're as bullish about it as I am, and I don't think they need to be. I mean, that's part of the conversation we're having. I just want to separate emphatically the conversation about sort of the share volatility, which is obvious, right? I mean, I think we're down to the share price roughly that there was about a month ago now, versus the conversation about AI. I don't think it's useful to doubt that AI broadly is coming to a theater near you. I do think it is potentially useful to have a conversation about share prices, which is not my métier. That's not my field. My field is trying to find the future and then invent it.
Yes.
And or invent it. And so I think, in fact, AI is going to be in every part of life: education, healthcare, personal lives, professional lives, commerce. And therefore, it's going to be, because it's pervasive, like the internet, it's going to be the place that the next trillions of wealth will be created, probably without equal.
Michael, thank you. Michael Fursick is the founder of several AI companies and investor in NVIDIA. Let's go live to New York and our correspondent, Ritika Gupta, who's there. Give me your reading, Ritika, of what's happening on the market so far.
Yes. Well, we're of course talking about NVIDIA and how that's been a big drag on the market. We got, of course, a big sell-off yesterday, $279 billion wiped off the market value. And then, of course, that DOJ a subpoena. So that's a big drag. It counts about 6.1% of the S&P 500 index. So it has a big influence there. But the market, I mean, it's also watching the job openings data that we got. That actually falling to the lowest level since January of 2021. And this all ahead, of course, of all eyes being on the jobs report on Friday. And that's something that traders are going to be watching heavily as well, after the big disappointment that we got from the previous month's jobs data. And this is all going to be weighing on the Fed when it meets later this month and it's deciding on a potential rate cuts. Will it get 25 basis point or 50 basis point cut to borrowing costs? So again, the market's contending with a few factors here, of course, NVIDIA and its big weighting, as well as looking ahead to economic data and what the Fed's actions may be.
Okay, Ritika, thank you. Let's go back to Russ Moll from AJ Bell, because in the way that we were hearing from Michael, some people are buying NVIDIA's stock. NVIDIA itself is investing in AI in Japan, in a little AI startup.
It's continuing to invest as rapidly as it can because it's got a very strong competitive position. But technology is littered with companies who were king of the hill one day or queen of the hill one day and were obsolete the next. So it will definitely have to continue to invest very aggressively in research and development. It acquired a company in April called Run AI, which is now the subject of another Department of Justice antitrust investigation. So it will definitely have to continue to work hard to stay where it is and, from a shareholder's perspective, justify its stock market valuation as it stands or indeed further upside.
Stay with us, Russ. You're with World Business Report from the BBC World.
I'm Sumi Somaskanda from the Global Story podcast, where we're looking at the problems facing Boeing after failures of its Starliner spacecraft have left two astronauts stranded in space. They were supposed to be on the International Space Station for 8 days, but will now be there for at least 8 months. This is the latest in a long line of crises facing the company. So is this one failure too far for Boeing? Find us wherever you get your podcasts.
Service. China has welcomed more than 50 African leaders to Beijing this week for a summit to strengthen ties at a time of increasing political and economic turmoil.
President先生首次访问域外国家，即到访中国。 That was the China President Xi Jinping holding talks with the Senegalese President Bassirou Diomaye on Wednesday. He said China and Senegal are partners on the path of national development and revitalization. He's also been talking to the President of the Democratic Republic of Congo, Félix Tshisekedi. Patrick Muyaya Kentembwe is the country's Minister of Communications and told us about the areas of cooperation the DRC is looking for.
China is the first economic partner of DRC with more than 20 billion business a year. So this meeting will be a big meeting with all of different African countries. It's going to be the time for us to speak, to see what we have done in the past and what we can do for the future. Because the President Xi described China and African countries as the country, as developing countries. So there is certain ways we can start working together more closely, especially in questions of agriculture, infrastructure. That will be some of the topics it will be on the table during this meeting. At the government level, we agree that we put our cooperation in a strategic level where both presidents can closely follow each question, especially on economic level, not only on economic level. This time, we want more to focus on agriculture, where we can make sure we can feed people from DRC and see the way we can make some exportation of our product here in China.
Well, to find out more about what China wants from these talks, I've been talking to Sanusha Naidu, Senior Research Associate with the Institute for Global Dialogue in South Africa.
China wants to reaffirm itself as an important strategic actor for and with African countries. And what we see as deepening tensions between the US and China, China would like to project as that actor that is not necessarily abandons its friends and partners in time of need. Also, I think that from an economic perspective, I think China realizes that it needs to also deepen its relationship with Africa because there are critical minerals in Africa, particularly around the green technology and around the kind of renewable energy and the tensions around tariff escalation between China and the EU.
But the actual amount of investment from China in African nations is significantly down, and it tends not to be state investment now. It tends to come from private companies. Why is that?
Well, I think the Chinese have also realized that in terms of the fact that they also go through, like any investor, ebbs and flows. So there's also a kind of reconfiguration around the thinking in China, particularly the fact that China's also, you know, in many ways, since the kind of boom that it had with double-digit growth. China's economic conditions are not always as people perceive it to be. It is going through structural constraints. It is being challenged. There have been questions around, you know, overheating of the economy. And so the money that it has to actually lend has to find some kind of partnership with the private sector to deepen these public-private partnerships. So I think this is also about differing costs, but also mitigating risk.
So China gets access to raw materials and gains global influence. China's often known for doing deals that they don't have to give much in return on the other side. I know one thing that some African countries want out of this is more tourism from China, South Africa particularly. I spoke to one of Cyril Ramaphosa's delegation who were there in Beijing a couple of days ago, and she's very focused on wanting people from China to come and visit Africa.
Yes, reducing the bureaucratic issues around gaining visas and increasing and stimulating tourism growth for South Africa. But I think it's beyond that as well, is the trade deficit that Africa has with China. And it's really around that issue of how do you actually deal and you address the trade deficit, where you actually want to have more kind of manufacturing of African goods using the critical minerals and other mineral extractors to be able to stimulate the kind of growth path you want in Africa. And that has been a key question. It is a very difficult one in terms of the fact that you've got to have the investment in Africa. You've got to also have the technical experience transfer and knowledge base. But at the same time, I think African countries are realizing, as President Ramaphosa has articulated even today, that it's something that they need to put on the table and address very critically. The summit in itself is more kind of the optics of what has already been discussed and already the kinds of investments, the kinds of projects that they're going to come in. But I think what's really important is the kind of alignment of relations under the Belt and Road Initiative. And I think that's something we need to watch very, very importantly. We need to monitor where these projects are and what impact they're having and how much of these projects are new money or is it just a rollover of money that's coming in.
Sanusha Naidu from the Institute for Global Dialogue. Russ Moll from AJ Bell is with me. Why is China keen to splash the cash in African countries when it's not got as much cash as it used to have?
I think, again, resource security and security of supply are extremely important in a world where we do have fractured supply chains, where we do have tariffs and trade tensions between countries. Those trade tensions mean it's also continuing to look for new markets if regions such as the European Union or America are no longer as welcoming as they once were. I think those are probably two key reasons for terms of trying to stimulate international growth. The commodities can be used for domestic growth, and the domestic economy, as we know, is struggling in the midst of a real estate bust, an awful lot of debt, and a very difficult transition from exports manufacturing to personal consumption.
And the minerals, really important for a subject we're coming on to next, electric cars. They need those minerals for the batteries.
And not just electric cars, but also silicon chips, for example, we've just been talking about NVIDIA. China is a huge player in areas such as in germanium, which is for silicon germanium chips, which are used in satellites and high-frequency mobile phones and communications. So it has a very, very strong position there. So if China wanted to get difficult, it could restrict supply to the west of that and retaliate.
Thanks, Russ. Let's go to Germany now. What you can hear there are the shouts and whistles inside a hall of thousands of VW workers gathered to hear the company's management speaking on Wednesday. Now, if you were with us on World Business Report this time yesterday, you'll have heard the warning that VW could close factories for the first time in its history. This worker in Wolfsburg, where the company is based, heading into work on Wednesday, sums up the mood.
What can I say? The mood is low. We're building the product and they want to save with us? We all cannot understand that. Maybe they should start by touching the bonuses of the managers. A plant closure is always a really bad thing. Even if it was Hanover or Salzgitter, it's unimaginable for someone working there. That would be really bad.
There are many towns and cities where VW is the biggest employer. Hanover is one. 20,000 people work directly for VW there, 30,000 in the wider car industry. Emden in northern Germany is another, 8,000 VW employees there. I've been talking to the mayor of Emden, Tim Kruthoff.
The people are concerned about the news which VW released 2 days ago, because they were told the last 3 years that would be the right way to move to the electric vehicles. And so the people brought a lot of enthusiastic into the transformation. And now they're very disappointed about this news they heard 2 days ago.
Because Emden is a place where thousands and thousands of people work for VW, work in the supply chain, work for other companies that either look after supplies or look after the workers. It's one of those towns where if VW closed its plant, almost everybody would be affected.
Everybody would be affected. A complete region would be affected. So the complete northwest of Germany. And we have a lot of industrial problems at the moment because we have a big shipyard here and they're building cruise ships and they have problems too. And we have a big builder for windmills and he has problems as well. So it's really, yeah, you can imagine what happened would if VW is going to close that factory in Emden.
And when it's all so uncertain, people can't make any plans. It's hard to know what to say to them, I would have thought, as the mayor.
That's true. We're just saying at the moment that they just please stay relaxed and be calm. And we addressed it to the German government, the problems we have, because it's time now for doing something to make this situation better than it is at the moment. So it's a very hard discussion with the families because it's affected the complete life of the people.
And there must be a lot of businesses, whether it's people making sandwiches that workers eat for their lunch or places that people go on the way home to work out or to have a drink or whatever. There must be lots and lots of small businesses thinking, what will this mean for me?
Yes, that's true. And it's 8,000 people work for VW in Emden, and the same amount of people, so 16,000 in complete, are working indirectly for VW. So, yeah, everybody is in a very bad mood.
And what would your message be to the company and to the German government?
My message to the German government is just find solutions for that situation, because we did a lot of mistakes in the last 5 years by not having a clear environment for this transformation to the electric cars. And so VW is owned 20% by the government of Lower Saxony. So they should just fight for having this factory in Emden not to be closed.
And what specifically are the mistakes that you think have been made?
Of course, it was a discussion in the European Union from just first they said they won't switch to electromobility, then they didn't do it. At least we did not have the infrastructure for electric cars in Germany as good as it must be. And they don't give an incentive to people to switch from classic cars to electric cars and all this together. And of course, some mistakes which VW did by themselves are made in the last years.
That's the mayor of Emden, Tim Krutoff, on how people are feeling there. Back to Ross Mould. I mean, Tim's talking about the German government and policy about encouraging electric vehicles. It would seem to me what's going on is that the Chinese car manufacturing industry has exploded, so there's much less market for German cars in China. In fact, people in Germany are buying Chinese cars.
If you were being particularly ruthless, you could argue that Volkswagen was too busy trying to cheat the diesel emission tests and not busy enough focusing on electric vehicles when it had the chance. And I think that is something that is unfortunately is coming home to hit the company now. In addition, you have to admit, like it or not, that German labour is much more expensive than a lot of other labour in Europe. BYD, the leading Chinese electric vehicle manufacturer, is set up in Hungary, where it's just an awful lot cheaper, so yes. And also Europe is suffering at the moment from, you know, expensive energy, partly again because some of the sourcing decisions that it made with Russia, which have now not worked out quite so well. So there's some huge issues here, all of which are coming back to haunt VW, a lot of them through no fault at all of the unions, although equally VW would say the unions have got a very powerful role and they're one of the reasons why our labour is so expensive.
Might these trends be unstoppable, whatever giant corporations and European governments think or do?
Volkswagen is clearly frightened they are, because that's why it's looking to accelerate its cost-cutting programme, and its shares are back at levels they were in 2015. To again suggest that the investors are worried that there are some serious trends working against the company. One thing that might save it, I mean, it still makes fantastic internal combustion engine cars, and also it has an investment in Rivian, which is an electric vehicle maker. And ultimately, electric vehicle sales aren't quite developing as quickly as people hoped, or a lot of people would like them to, so that may again give them more chance to catch up in the race.
We'll come back to Ross in a moment. First, the president of Egypt, Abdel Fattah el-Sisi, is in Turkey on the first such trip in 12 years. You can hear the sounds there of the full ceremonial welcome for the Egyptian president. His Turkish counterpart, Recep Tayyip Erdogan, shook hands with Mr. Sisi as he stepped off the plane in Ankara. He was given the big reception. The two countries severed diplomatic ties in 2013, and now they're promising friendship and cooperation. Live to Victoria Craig. Victoria, what's changed?
Well, as you say, now is a big thaw in relations between the two countries. As you say, it's President Sisi's first visit in 12 years, and it follows President Erdogan's own visit to Cairo for the first time in more than a decade there. Earlier this year, back in February, he said then that he hoped the two countries would increase trade to $15 billion from where it is now at around $7 billion. And just before the joint press conference that the two leaders held just this hour, President Sisi said that his visit today here to Ankara and President Erdogan's previous visit to Cairo reflect the will to, quote, start a new friendship and cooperation between both Egypt and Turkey. And so, you know, this is one that's driven both by geopolitics as well as economics. Both countries are suffering from their own crises in their own economies at home. So this deal, they've signed more than a dozen agreements today, somewhere between 17 and 20. We haven't gotten an official count that look to increase business ties and cooperation
cooperation in areas like defense, energy, tourism, health, education, and culture. So this comes, you know, it's important to note too that this comes on top of trade that had already been rising between the two sides since President Erdogan sort of set out on a diplomatic charm offensive, I suppose you can call it, in the region to sort of repair relations with a number of countries.
So you sweep away blocks to trade, and that's going to help. But also, it's a cultural thing, isn't it? If the two governments are friendly with each other, then it's more likely that companies on both sides will want to do business.
Exactly. And President Erdogan at that joint presser this hour said that Turkish businesses have invested in the last year $3 billion in Egypt. And he says as a result of this sort of thaw in diplomatic relations, he expects Egyptian businesses to sort of reciprocate that. And as you say, mending ties is mutually beneficial to Egypt and Turkey's economies. For Turkey and its $1 trillion economy, you know, President Erdogan has been on this quest for sort of regional rapprochement, which, as I said before, is just as much geopolitical as it is economic. He very much wants to be a regional power player, somebody who can broker deals and you know, go, you know, sort of tread this very fine line between East and West. But he's also under massive pressure here in Turkey to rein in this long-burning economic crisis that saw inflation peak most recently this year at just under 80%. So one of the prongs of this new economic program, which he's embarked on for the last year, is to boost exports to try to reduce Turkey's trade deficit, which means that it's been spending more money to import goods than it's been making on exporting. And so any progress on that front, something that he can bring home and show his citizens here that he's working to try not only to repair diplomatic relations with its neighbors, but also make his country more powerful. You know, that's going to go a long way toward a domestic audience and also, you know, go a long way toward repairing its economy.
Victoria, thank you very much indeed. Let's just finish the programme with Russ Moll from AJ Bell. A couple of profit warnings that might be worth flagging up to our listeners, Russ. First of all, Hormel Foods in the US. Tell us about them.
They're famous for Spam and Skippy peanut butter there. I'm sure there are other brands of those products that you can buy as well. The shares are down 9%. They're blaming partly problems at a facility in Virginia, but also falling turkey prices, which I suppose is good news for consumers. Dollar Tree is the other big profit warning. That's a discount retailer. That follows a warning from Dollar General and also other consumer-related companies like Starbucks, Disney's and Lululemon, which suggest that many of the American consumers coming under pressure. I think what's frightened people about Dollar Tree is that it's middle and higher income customers who are showing the greatest weakness in terms of volumes and particularly average spend.
And there's a lot of nervousness, no doubt, about the US election as well, feeding into all of this. Just as we come to the end of the programme, Russ, what's going on with NVIDIA stocks? Because, of course, it's changing all the time.
Buying on the dip is what my investors have been conditioned to for a long time. They've tried that again today. The shares are now up around 1.5% in the New York Stock Exchange. The shares are still up over... Shares are still up strongly for the year, so we'll see what happens.
That might just be Michael Furtick, who we were speaking to a few minutes ago buying the stock. I don't know. Russ, thank you very much indeed for being with us on the BBC World Service. We always appreciate it. Remember, we love it when you get in touch. world.business@bbc.co.uk. From me, Andrew Peach, thanks for listening to World Business Report.
I'm Sumi Somaskanda from the Global Story Podcast, where we're looking at the problems facing Boeing after failures of its Starliner spacecraft have left two astronauts stranded in space. They were supposed to be on the International Space Station for 8 days, but will now be there for at least 8 months. This is the latest in a long line of crises facing the company. So is this one failure too far for Boeing? Find us wherever you get your podcasts.